This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sports Talk Radio here on AM 870 WKAR. I'm your host, Day 4, Larry Marasco. Joined today with producer Alex Sharg. He's back from Tuesday. We're going to have a lot to talk about today. Whenever you want, give us a call, 355-9527 or toll free, 877-952-7870. Lots to talk about today. Plenty of things happened on the NFL free agency front yesterday afternoon and last night, which included the Lions. Also, we're talking about some Tiger baseball where Brennan Bosch was released yesterday. Something to talk about. A couple of years ago, you thought he was going to be the future of the Tigers outfield, and he's not there anymore. 1:30, we're going to be joined by the columnist of the Lansing State Journal, Lansing's own Graham Couch. We're going to be talking about Michigan State basketball and the Big Ten tournament with him. And if he can try to talk hockey, he can't. I'm only kidding. He'll be on with us at 1:30. Hopefully we'll have him for half an hour. And if you have any questions for him, feel free to call as well, 355-9527, while he's on the air. Alex, how you doing today?
Well, I'm trying to catch up on everything with this free agent wire, which we'll get to in just a minute. But I'm also elated because Brennan Bosch is released. And I personally didn't feel he was going anywhere for years. And I think a lot of other Tiger fans would agree that Bosch probably wasn't your everyday prototypical outfielder, although he did have the hype behind him. But, yeah, for Detroit sports, there's a lot to take in right now. I mean, talk about someone from New York. We can go all day about New York sports.
Well, we could. But let's start first with the Lions. And yesterday, they finally signed Reggie Bush. Now, I like the signing. And the reason is you can't have too many weapons on offense. And with what the Lions already had in place, Reggie Bush might be able to run free for a long time. Okay, not past the goal line, obviously, but he is going to have a good time next year and hopefully in the years moving forward. I think he's on a 4-year deal worth $4 million a year, and I just see good things happening for the Lions. You have Calvin Johnson stretching the field and taking two guys with him. It doesn't leave two guys underneath to take care of Reggie Bush.
Right. Well, and the other side of this argument is his age. He's 29. Running backs usually not. There are those rare cases when you are 30 and above, your knees start to wear down, your numbers start to decrease. Not saying that's going to happen to Bush. Hopefully not, knock on wood. I mean, do you think that could happen to him?
See, here's the deal. He hasn't been the every down pounder for the 8 years he's been in the league.
Right.
That's not been his job. The idea when he first came in after he proved in New Orleans that he couldn't be the between-the-tackles type back. It was all about getting him in space, on the outside, or even just in front of the defensive line. And when I say in front, I mean behind, on the offensive side of the line. The defensive side of the line.
Right.
So I think we know where he is now. He ran between the tackles the last 2 years in Miami, but he can be something of a missing link for this Detroit offense. Obviously, they don't have offensive problems, but this can open up a whole new world. Calvin Johnson at 2,000 yards receiving this year, or came close, he could blow that away next year. And it's going to be because of this threat. They still need that secondary receiver on the other side of the field to go along with Pettigrew and Bush and Johnson. But this, I think, opens up a whole new world to this passing offense, where there are going to be three guys on the field at all times when they want to throw the ball, that teams are going to have to cover, and at different levels of the field. That's what's important. You're going to have to deal with Pettigrew, who's dangerous over the middle, Johnson, who's dangerous everywhere, but especially over the top, and then you're always going to have to find Bush. Very Marshall Faulk-esque, I believe, is what's going to happen next year in Detroit. If you want to come on and give us a call, 355-9527, toll-free 877-952-7870. I think someone's taking advantage of that opportunity now. Across the league, a lot of moves yesterday, but the biggest one and the one that's getting the most attention is Wes Welker going to Denver. Here's a guy that started his career in Miami and since then has only been dealing with Hall of Famers. Tom Brady for 6 years. I don't even know what the number is. He's been a Patriot forever now. And now he's going to go play with Peyton Manning, who basically made the slot receiver a glorified position in his time. Brandon Stokley is a household name over the last decade because of Peyton Manning. So I can only imagine what's going to happen with Wes Welker there, especially with the outside weapons Denver already has. On top of that, the Patriots signing Danny Amendola to counter the move. But the problem with that is Amendola's always hurt. And that's not going to change in Foxborough. Welker took a lot of hits, and any slot receiver does. So to call it a wash or to make those signings equal is not the case. Obviously, the Broncos come out on top in this deal. Welker got the money he was looking for. I think this is a hit to the Patriots. But then again, the Patriots take a hit every year and still are the Patriots because they have Tom Brady and they have Bill Belichick. That's all there is. Alex, I want to talk to you about something I saw last night. You'll be surprised. I'm not an NFL guy. It's just an NFL week. I don't know what it is. But two nights ago, I noticed on the NFL Network, they had a show about the 95 Cleveland Browns. And I only got to see the last half last night because I didn't make a point to watch it. I had forgotten to. And it is amazing. If you look at the talent in the coaching pool of the 95 Cleveland Browns and all their assistants, not just the coaches, managers, whatever, it is amazing. We're talking like 8 or 9 guys that went on to have huge NFL careers that were in this system. Phil Savage, you had Belichick, Nick Saban, which we knew, Mangini, which we knew, Newsom, Schwartz. I didn't know Schwartz. Jim Schwartz was there. Wow. I can't get all the names because I'm sitting there watching, and every moment somebody else pops up, and I'm sitting there like, what? This is crazy. Talk about a team that had everything in place, and then just, you know, because a stadium wasn't going to be built, dismantled everything and moved on. Not everything. Ozzie Newsome stayed. But, I mean, wow. I know it's
dream team.
I know, yeah, it really was. And they were right there. And then you just got to feel for the – you see, you're Lions fans. You really got to feel for the Browns because they still have never had that opportunity to have a quarterback. I mean, they had Bernie Kozar. That's it.
They tried. Now they try to have a quarterback.
Which one?
Oh, they – sure.
But no, it was a great little documentary. They didn't do it as well as the ESPN's 30 for 30s, as far as I'm concerned, but it was very well done. And I didn't realize how many were there. I knew about 6 or 7 of them, but they just kept adding on to the list. Very impressive and unfortunate for everyone in Cleveland. So moving on, NFL free agency is not over. We spoke about it a couple days ago. The Bears got their offensive lineman yesterday. The Vikings are supposedly looking at Greg Jennings, only to make things more interesting in the NFC North. And who knows where the Packers are going to wind up. Honestly, right now, I'm not sure they've made a big signing. So lots of things going on in the NFL. It's not going to die anytime soon with Darrelle Revis being available and still plenty of holes to fill on Baltimore. That's really what I'm most excited about, to see what Baltimore does to replace what they've lost in the last couple of days. Now, I want to hear your opinion. 355-9527, 877-952-7870. If you need a toll-free line, what do you think of the Lions' moves? They've re-signed Chris Houston. They went out and got one of the top safeties on the market from Houston. Quinn Clough, I think his name is. Close. I think they're making the right moves that they're able to make. They don't have the money to take on what you'd want to take on, like re-signing Cliff Averill or even replacing him with a top-notch defensive end. But with what they have to work with, the only question I'd have is the Chris Houston signing, because he might have been their best cornerback, but Chris Houston is not an above-average cornerback in the NFL, in my opinion. There's a reason why he didn't stick in Atlanta. But if you have an opinion, you want to talk about it, give us a call. Now, when it comes to the Tigers, here is a team that has been relatively successful for years. You've had 2 World Series, and just not World Series championships, two World Series appearances. And this year, you're stacked. Beyond, I mean, just stacked. When you add Victor Martinez to what you had last year with Cabrera and Fielder, and then you throw in the new number two pitcher that you held on to from last year, and Verlander, this team looks like they're going to run away with the AL Central. And then, if there's one issue, is youth in the lineup that's going to be here beyond the elite guys that you have, beyond the Fielders and the Cabreras. But they're not at the end yet, so it's not that big of a deal. But a couple of years ago, you thought that was Brennan Bosch. You know, he came onto the scene and lit it up. I know he won a friend of mine's fantasy league for her.
Yeah, well, at the same time, he lit it up. But there was a lot of hype behind it. A lot of hype that wasn't necessarily clear. Sure, he lit it up first 3-4 months he got called up. But I don't know. You really can't go that early on him.
No, and now he doesn't hit the baseball. I mean, bottom line, it's an all or nothing thing. He has the power. He'll find a spot in the league, but it's just a surprise. You know, it's spring training. You think it's a nothing day. Next thing you know, a guy from 2 years ago you thought was going to be one of your outfielders, at least if you were just a casual fan, if he'd be around for a while, and now he's gone. So it's not like saying goodbye to Brandon Inge. I mean, that touched all of us, I'm sure. but you have the, you know, here's the thing. The Tigers have everything they need in Justin Verlander. Let's be honest. The toughest thing in baseball to have is that stud starting pitching. That is the elite quarterback. That is the number one defenseman in hockey. You need that stud. And they have it. They're one of the few teams that have a guy that can just, you never know how good it's going to be each night. Because every night there's a chance for 10 strikeouts. There's a chance for a no-hitter. I mean, it really is. He's got that type of stuff and that type of control of it. Alex, going into the season, I think everybody would say they'd expect the Tigers to win the AL Central.
Right.
I think that would be a disappointment if they didn't. But what do you see as the Tigers' biggest issues moving forward?
Right. Now, the biggest issues with all the acquisitions they made, they dropped Bosch, they signed Hunter. Offensively, in the field, I think they're fine. Now, of course, with Verlander, sky's the limit, sure. Back into the pitching, yeah, they've got some solid guys in Porcello and some of the younger guys, and, you know, Smiley, to name a few. But the concern, obviously, is the relief, and it goes with the bullpen. Losing Jose Valverde was a big loss.
I don't know if that was a loss.
You know, I'll tell you. No, you left, but listen, it wasn't much of a loss. Sure, towards the end of this year, compared to other years he's been with Detroit, the end of this year wasn't his best year, and his consistency lacked. Tiger fans were antsy about him, but you look at other Tiger pitchers. You look at Todd Jones. You can't get more antsy than Todd Jones was when he was on Detroit. But back to what I was saying is you lose a guy who you could rely on that was consistent. Sure, he was scary throughout his 2-3 years in Detroit, but he was consistent. I mean, he did not single-handedly, when it came to the playoffs, lose games. And now you're starting the year with Bruce Rondon, who sure is a high fastball thrower, similar to Zamaya in that aspect, with coming in those late-game situations, blinking hitters. But you lose consistency. There's no proof how consistent Rondon is. The only proof that we have is we see that his second spring training game, he throws 2 wild balls. So it's a little scary, if you ask me, Larry.
They need a closer. There's no question about it. You can argue how overrated the position is or how underrated it is, but they need someone to finish the games, and they don't have that. And in that situation, I can see why you're concerned about Valverde. I'm more concerned about right now you think you have 6 starting pitchers, and there's talk about Porcello possibly being a Ranger soon or just moving him. And here's my take. I spoke about the number two guy, the new number two guy, which is really Anibal Sanchez that you had last year. You just had to re-sign him. But here's my concern. The Tigers had another Florida Marlin pitcher, and they traded for Dontrell Willis. You saw what happened there. Right. I'm not saying the same thing's going to happen, but here's the deal with basically every starting pitcher that's pitched for the Marlins. And they are now the Miami Marlins, so I apologize for that mistake. None of them are consistently dominant. They've all had great stuff. Beckett, Johnson, Sanchez, they've had great stuff. Burnett, okay? Willis. But no one has ever been consistent year in and year out and healthy. It's amazing how it goes across all of them. And Beckett's right there. You know, he's had some great years. But and he's always going to strike somebody out. But he can walk the ballpark. And Anibal Sanchez just got paid. Okay? I'm not going to lie. I don't expect him to have a great year. He could.
Sure.
But I don't expect Anibal Sanchez to light things up and be the true number two this year. It's just, you know, I know he's familiar with the place already. He was there last year. I just don't think he's going to have a successful year. That being said, you're going to hit. You're going to hit a ton. Jackson, Cabrera, Fielder, Martinez. Oh. You're not missing anything there, Avila. Right. You're going to hit. The question is, and here's the thing. You brought up Torrey Hunter. I'm sorry. He's ancient.
I didn't wash up.
I just don't consider it. He's just filling an outfield void for a year or two, and he's going to do it on an average level.
Sure. I mean, you know, we're not expecting the king of all swats here, but we're expecting someone that would be better than Brendan Bosch.
Yeah. Well, you're expecting leadership and consistency. That's really what comes down to it. Bosch, he could hit 10 home runs in April, and he might hit 3 in May, and Say it again? Oh, I know. Come on. Help me out here. So, sorry, folks. This Alex is causing me problems in a good way. In a good way. We're just too close too soon. So, like I said, offense, I don't see being an issue. Hunter, eventually he's got to come down to earth and be a below average player. I think it's going to happen in this contract. I don't know if it's going to happen this year. So, but we'll see. But he did get 2 years.
Right.
So I think you'll see that in Detroit at some point. Well, we're going to take a moment to catch my breath and for Alex to slap me around a little bit. When you come back, we'll be 5 or 6 minutes away from Mr. Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal. So stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870.
The defense argued that a former New York cop only fantasized about cooking and eating women. A federal jury disagreed. They convicted the so-called cannibal cop of conspiracy to kidnap and other charges. I'm Neil Conan. Where's the line between thought and deed? Plus, what to make of the latest threats from a nuclear North Korea? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
We're back here on Sports Talk AM 870. That was Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on WKAR's AM 870. Like I said earlier, 5 minutes away, hopefully, Mr. Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal will be calling in. We've been talking about the Tigers. We will be talking about the Big Ten tournament and Michigan State basketball with Mr. Graham Couch. Alex, is that Graham on the line now? Oh, no. Oh, I apologize. I don't know why. I thought he gave me the signal. So, oh, fantastic. Kurt, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. So, now, I talked about Tiger baseball with you to start with.
Feel free. Shoot.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say that I'm really pleased that the Tigers cut Brendan Bosch. I'm sure there will be lots of people who will disagree with me, but the deal with Brendan Bosch is when he first came up a couple years ago and was hotter than a firecracker for the first half of the season and then tailed off at the end, and then it was never quite the same, he'd get some hot streaks and stuff, is because the rest of the league figured out how to pitch you.
Right.
He has an uppercut swing, and he has a terrible eye. All you have to do is throw the ball up and outside, and he swings and misses all the time. I will be shocked and amazed if he ever produces anywhere close to how he did when he first came up. So I didn't see a spot for him on the team. And for the good of the team, I think it was best that they get rid of him or let him go. And for the best interest of Brennan, I think it was good that he got released at this point so he could try and catch on with another team.
Now, there are many similar stories in baseball just like that with pitchers and with hitters, where once they go around the league once, maybe twice, They can fool everybody, but then eventually everybody catches up, and they are unable to make the adjustment. I'm really curious, and this isn't a Tigers thing, so I apologize, but it's similar. You have a guy last year like Yu Darvish that took a while to get settled in. You know, he could strike people out from day one, but the game really came to him in the last month of the season, which happens, you know, in all sports where someone has a great ending to a season. And I'm curious to see if Darvish becomes that elite pitcher this year, just like Bosch never became an elite hitter. I'm just curious if that's something that he can pull off in 2013. Kurt, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it.
I'm not done.
Oh, I apologize. Go ahead. Shoot.
Hey, before you go on, Kurt, I just want to say first off that you're not, I don't think you're alone here when you're saying that people might disagree with you about Brendan Bosch. I mean, personally, I feel most Tiger fans probably were happy to see Brendan Bosch go. Just to start, Kurt. Adding on top of that, just before I let you finish your, finish your couple questions here, is the thing that amazes me, Kurt, is that we in Detroit have seen Brendan Bosch. They figure out how to pitch to him. They love going to him outside. He has an uppercut swing. But the thing that amazes me, Kurt, and I don't know if you're aware of this, this is brand new off Sports Talk 870 right now, is that there are teams, blogs, Bleacher Report, USA Today, New York Times, there are reports of the Yankees, Sox, and Mets looking at Brendan Bosch as an option for their teams. Now, I'm shocked by that, first off.
Well, I'm not. The Yankees have so many injury problems and refuse to spend any money that if they can figure out a way for Bosch to play first base, they'll take it. If Bosch can play third, they'll take it even more. Kurt, what else do you have to add?
Well, just to respond to the last comment for 1 second before I go on, is, there are coaches all over the place in all sports who think they can take somebody else's scrap heap project and turn them into a superstar because, as long as they're working on it. But, whatever. In regards to Porcello, I heard the discussion about Porcello might be a Ranger or whatever, and I hope to goodness that they do not trade Rick Porcello away. And the reason I say that is because he's 24, and if you looked at his outings last year, what would happen to him is he would be great and have one bad inning. So all he has to do is, in his youth, figure out how to get rid of that one bad inning, and he's going to be a very, very good pitcher. To me, the weakness on the Tigers is Johnny Peralta at shortstop, and, in terms of a field player. The rest of it is all set up very nicely, but I have a lot of concerns. I remember watching the World Series last year, watching how the shortstop for the Giants were throwing guys out by four steps, and the next half inning, Peralta would get the same ball hit to him, and it would be a bang-bang play. I am just really concerned about their shortstop play, and hope that doesn't come back to bite them at some point, but I think their offense is deep enough to where they can overcome it. And I'll hang up and let somebody else talk.
Thanks Kurt. He has a point about Peralta, but you know what? The Tigers have spent a lot of money. They've chosen to put their money on the corners and not necessarily up the middle.
Yeah.
It's about power. It's also about what's available when you have the money to spend.
Right.
It's today, we were spoiled back in like 2000 when there was Garcia Parra, Jeter, and Rodriguez. You thought it was the change. All new shortstops, all young shortstops are going to have all this power, be able to hit, great range in the field, and it hasn't turned out that way. Tulowitzki could be one of those guys, and he is, but he's always hurt. I'm not going to lie, I thought there'd be more athletes playing the position that had those abilities to this point, and they're not there. And what we have is a guy like Elvis Andrews, who is a fantastic shortstop. But he's a throwback. If any, he's got a little more pop than he shows. He really does. I spend time in Dallas. I go to probably a dozen Ranger games a year, and I watch a little bit too much. But he's got a little more pop than he actually shows in the games. But he is your classic, what you wanted in a shortstop 25 years ago.
Right.
And with a bat, just not with a powerful bat. And that's unfortunately we don't see more of the Jeter, Garcia, Parra, A-Rod types, but that's how special that time was. You really thought you were going to see more of that over the next decade or so, and it has not happened. Our phone lines are open at 355-9527, toll free, 877-952-7870. We should be joined by Graham Couch shortly as we still talk about Tiger baseball until then. One of the things you brought up again with Brennan Bosch being in demand in the Northeast, and if there's a team, I brought up the Yankees. Granderson's hurt for a month. So they could use somebody to fill in if they don't have one of their kids come up and break through and make the team. But the team that has outfield issues, because they're playing a quad A outfield this year, is the New York Mets. Brennan Bosch, I don't want to say gives them some credibility, but at least put somebody that's been in the major leagues and has had some success in their outfield. So that wouldn't surprise me at all. It's cheap, right up the Wilpons alley. And Alderson, for that matter, who doesn't want to give up a big contract for any more than 5 or 6 years. Bosch would come cheap, fit into one of the corner spots, and hopefully hit some power. Because, again, he's been hanging in the American League, and they figured him out. So he might have a chance in the National to surprise some teams, at least at first, and give the Mets a bridge to somebody else for one season.
Yeah, Larry, that's the thing I don't understand is the transition between the American League and the National League. We always talk about how teams see a hitter. You know, they've seen him in the American League, but can't the National League just look at what American League teams have done and figure it all out?
Absolutely. They just haven't seen it with their own eyes, and they haven't been concentrating on it. So if you don't have an off season to deal with it, sometimes things fall through the cracks. So, you know, phone lines are open here in AM 870, 355-9527. Toll free at 877-952-7870. We're now joined on the line by Lansing State Journal's own Mr. Graham Couch. He's just a couch and he's on fire. Mr. Couch, how are you today?
Larry Marasco. It's been too long since we've been on the air together. Too long. I feel like we need to interview Irvin Brunson and Mike Ingram and some Niall Watson or something.
Graham Couch and I met at WLNZ at Lansing Community College in the fall of 1998, which tells you right now that we're getting old.
I'm 24, so we were like, what, 13?
Yeah, 12? It was young. We were ahead of our time.
Yep.
We only didn't get radio jobs after school because we were too young. So 24. Just so everyone knows, Graham believes he's going to be playing pro basketball in Scotland next year.
And I'm
going to be his agent.
There's a lucrative deal. The agent for me playing pro basketball.
If I get 10%, that's like $2,000, right? Well, Graham, I had told our listeners that you're going to be talking about Michigan State basketball and the Big Ten tournament, but I forgot to bring up one thing. Were you at the Pro Day yesterday for Michigan State football?
I was. There's nothing like Pro Day. I've covered maybe 7 or 8 Pro Days in my life between Michigan State and Western Michigan, and I've seen one moment worth writing about.
And what was that moment?
In 2009... And actually, this is what I missed. I only read about this moment. I was supposed to be covering it at Western Michigan, so I haven't even covered a moment. In 2009, the year Louis Delmas, who everybody's familiar with, plays for the Detroit Lions, was coming out of Western Michigan. Another guy in the secondary, E.J. Biggers, who was his high school teammate and also represented by Drew Rosenhaus, who was at the Pro Day at Western. Biggers ran like a 4.32 in the 40-yard dash, and vaulted on the draft boards, wound up getting drafted, still playing in the NFL, but at that moment kind of built his entire career. And you could see the scouts react to their watches, and that was one of the few moments I've ever seen that's been compelling at all. So yesterday was not.
Did anybody from the Michigan State football program increase their value?
I have no idea. Perhaps. I think Le'Veon Bell certainly he showed up and did a lot of the individual work, wanted to show that he could catch, wanted to show that he's a mobile guy. He's dropped some weight, and, I mean, you know, he's trying to prove he's more than a bruiser. And so if he did that, he seemed pleased with himself and that was his goal. So I think, you know, it's hard to tell what they did, but that's clearly something he's working toward. He's lighter than he played this season. So maybe he did, but it's very difficult to tell. The scouts, it's actually easy. When I was covering Western and you had fewer media folks there, it was much easier to get these guys to talk. You could kind of hang with them for a minute and get them to talk to you off the record. You know, at Michigan State, there's so many of us lemmings hanging around there just, you know, waiting for somebody to come over and speak to us that we don't get as much from the scouts. They're a little more hands offish.
And all 32 teams were represented, I'm aware of, right?
No, 29 of the 32 were there.
Who wasn't there?
I don't know. But 29 were there, which is a pretty good representation.
Well, my only other question in regards to that is a guy like William Golson, a kid with all the tools physically, that, you know, put some games together on the field that looked like he was a complete player, but not – he definitely didn't have a complete career. As far as not being able to get to the quarterback quick enough and just learning how to bat down balls in the last, like, 5 weeks of the season. Any word on him yesterday from any of the scouts?
No. He talked to the media after, you know, and Golson's hard to get a read on. I mean, he's I don't want to say disingenuous, but he's crafted. He's, you know, he knows what he's going to say, and you know, occasionally after a game, you get something that he's in the locker room a little more, maybe his upset or true feelings. But he's, I really don't know where he is. Now, he's the guy I think that people thought may come back more than anybody else and probably could have elevated his stock. But he's, you know, he's a ferocious talent, too. He's going to be drafted. He's going to get a shot. For all these guys, it's, you know, when you're not going to be a first-round pick, then maybe Le'Veon Bell is, you know, early second round if things really go well for him. And, you know, it's a weak tight end draft, so I don't know where Sims would go. But at a certain point, it becomes about a second contract. That first contract is, I mean, for guys like you and I, we could live forever off. I would happily retire. But it's not the, you know, make it rain on Vegas corner money that people think it is. And, so for it's whether you're ready and whether you can develop at the next level. So, I mean, that's what it'll come down to.
Yeah, see, and I'm on board for Bell leaving, not because I don't even think he's going to be a second-round pick, but I don't think it helps when you put 300 carries on your resume every year in college and then you come out as a senior. Just too much wear on the tires NFL's point of view.
Yeah, you've got to go.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Lorenzo White, who obviously played at MSU, who ran like 1,200 times a game for Pruitt. I mean, he basically said that hurt his NFL career. And, you know, unless, you know, this isn't basketball where that's less likely to happen and there's real value. Like, I always thought one of the great things for Mateen Cleaves, even though he didn't have a great NBA career, is that because he came back as a senior, and he could have left as a junior and been a first-round pick, is he's a legend in this town on Michigan State's campus. Forever will have that national title. That's something nobody can take away from him. Wound up being a first-round pick, got the guaranteed money. He's got a comfortable life. He's fine. And there was, to me, there was real value in him coming back. Even if, say, I mean, he had gotten hurt or hadn't, I mean, there's something there. But for Le'Veon Bell, I mean, what are you going to come back and hope Andrew Maxwell is better next year and the offense is moving? And, I mean, you might be running the same system, the same 300 yards. I mean, you ran for 1,600 yards. So unless the record matters to you, unless you're that loyal a fan, a Spartan, you know, there's no way you can come back. It would be really silly to me.
No, I'm right there with you. The only one – I thought Golson should have come back because of the position he plays. If you're a defensive end and you're lighting it up as a senior, you're going to be a first-round pick. You know, those line positions are just they're too hard to come by, and everyone needs defensive ends. So if he came back and had a stellar year, he definitely could have lifted his value to first-round status. But, you know, maybe that's not in him to begin with. Maybe he thinks he's reached his peak and he's got to get out while he still can. I don't know. Just my thought.
You know, it's hard to say. You're right. He had a disappointing year to me. He was the player I thought at times could be more dominant and wasn't. And maybe you're right. Maybe he doesn't have that gear off the edge and whatever. And, it's, you know, some people think he's an outside linebacker in a rush system in a 3-4 in the NFL. I don't know what he becomes. He's obviously a freakish athlete, and some coach has got to figure out where that position is best.
Graham, I have a question for you. Are you there?
That's my answer.
Oh, yeah. Are you okay with taking a call?
Of course.
Okay. Hold on. I have to make sure of one thing's right. Alex, help me out.
Lock it in.
How do I do that? Hit it again?
Click him on.
Do I hit him again? To lock it in?
No, you already got him locked in.
Oh, okay, good.
You get him on.
Graham, we're joined by Michael from Saginaw. Michael, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself? You did answer the phone this time.
What question do you have for Mr. Graham Couch?
Do those pro days, do they have juniors working out too? Do people going in their senior years? I'm just curious.
No. They have juniors if you've declared for the NFL, but none of the guys coming back are working out.
What do you think about since it's only Michigan State you probably talking about, you heard of Eric Fisher up in Central Michigan, haven't you?
Sure.
How highly rated he is. Do you think the Lions need to draft another lineman? Because it seemed like Matt Stafford lost some confidence behind his line last year. I think a good left tackle would help him also.
A good left tackle would help just about every quarterback. I think the Lions definitely need line help. They have for years. They've never had a great line. And when you look at what they're doing in free agency, I would not be surprised where they went in the draft, because obviously they're filling a lot of other holes right now, a lot of other ways. So yeah, no, I think that's the logic stands that they got to keep Stafford upright. I mean, it's a quarterback league. Your only chance at winning a Super Bowl is if you've got a franchise quarterback. And the Lions, I mean, this is how bad Lions history is. Matthew Stafford is already the greatest quarterback in Lions modern history. I don't Bobby Lane way back there, but he's the greatest quarterback in Lions history. He hasn't done anything yet. I mean, so you have to keep him upright however you do it.
Graham, Michael, thanks for the call. Graham, you'll be happy to know on my floor in Dallas, in the building I live, a gentleman about five floors down sacked Matthew Stafford in high school.
Really?
His name was Wayne Nicholson. Yes, he's very proud of that fact.
I also want to mention, listening to you work the control board, it was like a flashback to Columbia College trying to figure out the heck I was doing to make that, you know.
I could drop a caller, but I didn't know how to make sure I didn't drop you. Because that's the one thing, I'm not going to lie, I haven't had to deal with two callers at the same time yet.
Yeah, that's big stuff in the world of technology, absolutely.
I appreciate Alex helping me out. Graham, can you hold on for a second as we take a quick break? All right. Well, when we come back, we'll be speaking more with Graham Couch, this time about Michigan State basketball. So stay tuned for Sports Talk after this short break on AM 870.
Last year was the hottest year in the U.S. on record. On The Next Fresh Air, Justin Gillis talks about his New York Times series, Temperature Rising, examining climate change and extreme weather. Also, Jake Tapper looks back on his years as ABC's White House correspondent and looks ahead to his new CNN show, which starts Monday. Join us.
That was Fresh Air, coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870. Mr. Couch, you back on the line?
I'm here.
There it is. We're joined by Lansing State Journal columnist Graham Couch. So are you leaving for Chicago tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning, absolutely.
Graham will be covering the Big Ten tournament for the Lansing State Journal. And let's get this out of the way right now. Who do you think Michigan State will be playing?
I think it's not only is it Iowa, but I think if you and I were in the starting lineup with three other Iowa players, it would still be Iowa.
Okay, so Michigan State, Iowa, Friday night. What do you see happening?
You know, that's a good question. Joe Rexroth, who many listeners will be familiar with, is the beat writer for the Free Press and for us as well. He thinks Michigan State will either lose to Iowa or win the whole thing. And I can see that argument. Iowa's a dangerous team, and the thing they have going for them is they're desperate. And that's you can't fake that. It's the reason at mid-major tournaments are so different at conference tournament time, because often maybe one team tops is going as an at-large, if that. And Iowa needs to win, and Michigan State doesn't, and it's hard to counter that. And Iowa's capable. If you think back to that game in Iowa City, Michigan State really was outplayed most of the night. They got lucky at the end, and I still don't really know how they won that. Appling and Gary Harris hit big free throws at the end, and they were able to pull it out. But, I think it's 50-50 tomorrow. I do think they've got a really good chance to beat Ohio State. I think they're a better team than Ohio State if they see them Saturday. But, I really don't know. It's a late game. It's off the radar a little bit. I'm pick Michigan State, but I can see an avenue in which they lose pretty easily.
Sure. Iowa is the only team of any quality in the Big Ten that's desperate this weekend. Minnesota and Illinois should both be in the tournament from their ranking standpoint. But Michigan State's running into the buzzsaw. So in that case, I agree with you. What I don't know if I agree with you with is I think Michigan State's a better team than Ohio State, but I think Ohio State's the team playing the best going into the tournament. So I consider them to be the team to beat right now. Not saying they're better, they're just playing better right now.
Here's the thing. You get to – they are. But when the regular season ends, everything ends. And in terms of – especially going into conference tournaments. If you're hot, you're no longer hot. If you're cold, you're no longer cold. And conference tournaments are weird. You just cannot predict any of this stuff, because not only does the motivation change, the atmosphere changes. All of a sudden, you're in neutral sites. It's a different format. It's everything that's made you kind of on a roll is to me shaken up a little bit. And don't get me wrong, Ohio State may still play great basketball, but the reason they beat MSU, for example, during that stretch was not that they were hot. MSU played one of the dumbest second halves I've ever seen. They just played horribly. They outplayed them in the first half in Columbus, and they didn't play well. They gave up seven layups there in Kraft. At some point, you take away the layup, that didn't happen. So don't get me wrong. I think Ohio State's playing fantastic. I just think the vibe changes in conference tournaments more than anything else, more than any other tournament. Even the NCAA tournament. You're hot going to the NCAA tournament. You can feed off your conference tournament, but the conference tournament is just such a different dynamic.
No, it's true. And going back to that Michigan State Ohio State game, which was as frustrating as any game to watch this year for Michigan State, especially when they finally they're down big late and they cut it to three, and then they forget how to play basketball again. They had a good 3 or 4 minutes. You know what I'm talking about?
And
they just forget. I turned off the game. I was watching it. I was frustrating myself. I'm like, you know what? I'm done. And then like 2 minutes later, I'm like, I have to check. And I checked, and I'm like, oh, it's 3 points. And then it just fell apart again. So, maddening experience that game. And you could be right. Ohio State might not be on the tear that it looks like they're on. If I had to make an educated guess without just going by gut, that's the only thing I got going for me right now. Is Ohio State's playing better than everybody else?
Well, no, here's what I think they have going for them is they are winning big games, and they're winning the big moments. I mean, when you go to Indiana and win and beat Michigan State in the second half, the critical moments, and they don't have the talent that Indiana, Michigan, or Michigan State have in terms of depth of talent. They've got a few really good players, a couple in particular, but they don't have. Michigan State's starting five is considerably better than Ohio State. Same goes for Michigan and Indiana. But that's not always what it's about. And Michigan State fans, if you think back to those early Michigan State teams that won Big Ten titles when Cleves was around that first year, and that team probably doesn't win this Big Ten. This is a better Big Ten. But, that team wasn't the most talented team in the Big Ten. That team wasn't more talented than that Purdue team that year. But they had a guy who was able to will them in big moments, and they believed they were going to win those moments, and they won a Big Ten title because of it. Of course, they went on to lose in the first round of the conference tournament, so I guess the example is kind of moot.
They might not have been more talented than Iowa State that year.
Well, that was the year they won the national title. They might have not. That was a couple years later. Yeah, no, that's
the year I was talking about. Same team.
I was thinking 97, 98. Yeah, 97, 98. That first year Michigan State won it, they were pretty talented. By the time they won a national title, and they had Jason Richardson as a freshman coming off the bench. I mean, that was a pretty talented group. But, that year they won it all. I still think Iowa State was the best team in the country.
I did, too. At that point, I did, too. That game at the Palace was one of the best games I've ever been to.
Yeah, so, and I think Izzo will tell you, if that game is anywhere but the Palace, Michigan State probably doesn't win it.
I've heard him say it. I've heard him say that. Graham, last thing I'm going to ask you, do you have a prediction for this weekend? Who takes it all?
I think Indiana does. I think Michigan State gets to the Sunday, and I wrote this in today's State Journal, kind of predicted the tournament. I think Michigan State's got a chance. I don't like a couple matchups against Indiana. MSU really struggles with. Brandon Dawson struggles when he's not a better athlete than the guy he's guarding. I think it psychologically gets him, and when he's on Victor Oladipo, that's the case. Oladipo is kind of like a Brandon Dawson 3.0. You know, he's a little bit better athlete, a little more explosive. He's different. He's not quite as big, but he's got a better motor. And then Yogi Ferrell, for whatever reason, gives Appling fits. Appling's played two pretty bad games against Indiana, and I think part of that, you know, I went back and looked at those games a little bit, is the freshman in Indiana. I think he's a quick point guard who really adds to that team and makes them much more potent than they've been, even last year.
Well, I'm sorry. I said you were done, but I have one more for you because this is an issue the Big Ten's been dealing with for a while. I know the brackets aren't out yet, but does the Big Ten get at least one team in the Final Four?
Yes. Oh, no, I definitely think so because just the math of it, because they have three teams that I think are really capable of it. And Ohio State, I think, is the right matchups could keep going, but Ohio State can be beaten by a bad matchup. When you've got three teams that have a legitimate, just by the math of it, no league has a better chance to have at least one representative in the Final Four than the Big Ten this year.
Well, Graham, thank you very much. I appreciate your time today.
Larry, I tell you what, this I miss this. You know, we got to do this once, more than once every 13 years.
Well, you get a radio show in Chicago, and we'll talk.
Sounds good.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot, Graham. That was Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal. We have another caller on the line. Russ, how you doing today?
Larry, it's your old buddy from Reed's Impact Posse. How you doing?
How are you doing, Mr. White?
Doing great. Great to hear you back on the air. Takes me back a few years.
A few. More like a decade and a half.
You really are the one who put Sports Rap on the map at the Impact, so.
It's a small map.
You know, I did have a question, too, Larry. The other day you were talking, I thought I heard you mention that the NHL was realigning. Are they really doing that? And is it going to be more of an East-West? Are we going to play more Original Six teams, or what do you know?
Well, it's not approved yet. The Players Association has given it their approval for 2 years, and then they'll reassess. The owners or the Board of Governors, which is just a fancy way of saying the owners, they still have to vote on it. And if they do, and they put the plan in place that the media has told us about, the Red Wings would be playing in the Eastern Conference in a division with some old foes, some of the, I call them the surviving six, because they're not original anything. It'll be Detroit, Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto, and then it'll be Boston, Buffalo, Tampa, and Florida. So your only travel really in the league would be down to Florida. So the rest would be pretty easy. So, yeah, it would be much easier to follow the Red Wings on television because most of their games would be in the Eastern time zone.
Yeah.
It's not official, but that's basically what's probably going to happen.
And that would be next season, Larry, or what?
It would be next season. And the best part about it, and the only part of it that I'm excited about, is that there'll be divisional playoffs again. There'll be eight or seven teams in a division, and the top three teams in each division will go to the playoffs with some wild card factor that I don't know if they have it all figured out, but it would be the next two highest point totals in each conference would also make the playoffs.
Well, what is it, two divisions in each conference, or how is it?
Two divisions in each conference, and then you have to go through your division plus whatever wild card is placed in your division to get to the conference finals.
Yeah.
So if you remember the 80s, which is how I was raised on hockey and the way hockey should be, I'm sorry for anyone else who thinks otherwise, but the old Norris consisted of the North Stars, the Blues, the Blackhawks, the Red Wings, and the Maple Leafs. And at the end, it was an 80-game season, and they played each team in their division like 8 or 9 times. And at the end of the season, the top 4 teams from each division had to play each other in the playoffs. They 1 versus 4, 2 versus 3, and then those winners faced off, and then they'd play the Smythe Division champion.
Yeah.
So there'd be like three, there'd be so many champions. There was a regular season division champion, there was a playoff division champion, there was a conference champion, and then there was the Stanley Cup champion.
Yeah, I guess I'd like it just to not have all those games in San Jose and Phoenix and Winnipeg, like you said. But
I don't feel for you. You guys make plenty of money. I don't care about your travel. And the Red Wings have been plenty successful with that method. So I'm not too sympathetic towards the Red Wings cause, but the Red Wings fans should be, you know, it'll help them to watch games, that's for sure.
Yeah. You must love it, Larry, when Chris Berman refers to the NFC North as the NFC Norris, then, if you go back to the 80s.
I've done it on this show only because I hate the regional stuff. Dumb it down for the casual fan that doesn't pay enough attention.
Oh, completely.
I can't stand it. Now, the NFL's been doing it forever. They were the beginning of it, I believe. But the NHL is different. It's its own thing. It's never going to be bigger than one of the other three sports. They should just do what they do well and pay respect to their history.
Yeah,
and get rid of this
point.
You know, I mean, the Eastern and Western Conference in the NHL, the trophies are still the Prince of Wales trophies and the Clarence Campbell Cup from back when it was the Campbell and Wales Conference. Just
yeah,
go
I
back to
that.
It. Just go back to it. Rename the divisions for new stars, whatever, or I should say newly retired stars. But go back to it. That's what the NHL was. That's why it was so successful, is because they were so full of themselves. Get back
I'm with
to it. Russ, anything else you want to talk about today?
That's it, Larry. Great hearing you on the air. Welcome home.
Thanks a lot, sir. You have a good one. Say hello to the wife and kids.
Will do.
All right, kid. That was Russ White. I believe he's still hosting Exposure over at the Impact every now and then, from what I understand. Right? Is that true?
Yeah.
Russ White. There you go. Phone lines are open for the last 2 minutes of the show, 355-9527. Toll-free at 877-952-7870. Alex, this is going to be the last day I see you in here, I think.
Oh, it's so sad.
So I just want to thank you. Alex joined me Tuesday. And today, help me out. I haven't done this in a while, obviously. And I just want to say thank you over the air for making this work.
Absolutely. Thanks for indulging in some local favorites as well.
And he helped me. I don't know if you heard that little production ditty in the middle of the show, but that was all him 15 minutes before the show helping me out. So Aaron will join me tomorrow. I can thank him then. But
do I get a Chargers on Fire intro next time I'm on?
If you'd like to, we can do it.
Okay.
But you're not a couch. I mean, let's be
true,
honest. There's only 1 gram couch.
That's right.
Sorry, we can find something else for you if you would like it to go down that way. Well, this was Sports Talk on AM 870 WKAR. We'll be back tomorrow from 1 to 2, and I'll be joined by Matt Ludke again, the gentleman that joined me yesterday on the air. And I believe Aaron will be joining us in the production studio. Coming up, it's Talk of the Nation right here on AM 870 WKAR.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.